Hi, everyone.
Hi.
Yeah, there we go. I'm going to open this here that way. You guys know me. I can't remember. I need my notes. It's just taking a second. Oh, yeah. I'm Nick Davidson. And I am... That was a joke. This kid got it. Because that my name was in the... No, it's fine. It's fine. I had a retreat a couple years ago. It was a day-long retreat in by Brainerd. And it was like all day long, and these poor kids had been made by their parents. Some of them had been sedated by their parents to come and listen to me all day long. And so this one poor kid, hockey kid, was so tired. And I just told, I'll tell him, you guys what I told him. If you're doing that thing like that, where you're trying to stay awake, but you're just having little face seizures, as hard as it is for you to stay awake, it's twice as hard for me to watch you do that with your face. I'm not lying. Don't fight it. Just give in. That kid on a break, I just lined up chairs in the way back. I said, just lay down. You're killing us both. And he just went to sleep, and it made me so happy inside. Because you'd say, well, he's not getting anything out of the retreat. I'm sleeping. But he's not getting anything out of the retreat when that's what he's doing with his face. No one's getting anything out of that. So if you're tired or something tonight, or like Father Ben, he'll be out in minutes. Just out like a light. I'm trying to think of any other disclaimers. None, really. Oh, well, one thing I did want to say. I wanted to thank Father Ben. Do you guys call him Father Ben or Father Hadrich here? Father Ben, okay. So Father Hadrich. Normally, just because I guess in my course of speaking, I've gotten to ask to speak about kind of three or four things all the time. And so people will call up and be like, are you open on this date? And I will say, yes. And then they say, we were listening on your website. Would you come give that talk? And that's great. And that gives me time to polish things or whatever. But I also like it. I always give any church the option to tell me what I should talk about, because the pastor or the DRE or the youth minister, whoever's booking me, they know what you guys have heard and haven't heard and what you need to hear. And so I love it when a pastor or anybody will take me up on it and say, okay, don't do one of the things you're used to doing, do this, it's something new. And so that's, you wouldn't have known, but I wanted to thank Father Ben, because tonight I get to speak on something new that anyone who has to ever give talks, you know this, that in preparation for something, you have to learn as well. You have to change and you have to grow. And it's really, it's fun for me to have to kind of chisel out some more rough parts of myself in order to prep. Because anytime you prep a talk, you have to ask yourself, you can go up and be a liar and tell everybody what they have to do and not do it yourself, or you can decide whether or not you're going to do it for yourself. And so for me, I've had to do the same thing tonight. Father asked me to talk about the balance between technology and distraction and silence. And if you know me for a couple seconds, you know that silence is not easy for me. I came out of the womb just talking like crazy, and that's all I've ever done is talk. In fact, that's the only real gift that I have. It's just okay at it. But I don't have other skills. I was really bad in school. I don't learn quickly. I don't remember well. I don't have any of those things. I'm not really talented at sports. I don't have any of that. But I've always been able to talk. And so a long time ago, I had an agreement with God. If he wanted to use me talking, then I would go wherever he sent me. And turns out he sends you to the farthest corners of the United States, International Falls. So I'm really glad to be here, and I want to thank Father for letting me speak on something else. But because of that, even more than usual, I will have to rely on my notes because I have a bad memory. So we'll just start in on it. In the Old Testament, you guys have all heard the phrase, the law and the pro... Oh, you have a question. Yes, sir.
Is this the coldest town in Minnesota?
Are you guys? Do you guys have the most snowfall in Minnesota? Or no? Are you just lying about everything I ask you? You really want this town to be the best at everything. It's really loud here. When I got out of my car, there's some loud noise right over there. Is that always on? Is it a factory or something? I don't know what it was. It sounded like a marching band not doing well. Okay, was that your only question? Nailed it. Okay, so in the Old Testament, we have the Law and the Prophets, and you hear the Law and the Prophets, the Law and the Prophets, the Law and the Prophets. You've heard that all the time. All through, you hear it all the time in the church here, the Law and the Prophets. Jesus talks about the Law and the Prophets. And those two are summed up in Moses and Elijah. Moses is the one who gave us the Law. You know, he went up Mount Sinai, and then God wrote on the things, they gave it to Charlton Heston. And that's Moses to us. That's where we get the Law. And so Moses always represented the Law. And then Elijah is one of the major prophets. A prophet was a mouthpiece of God. So God would talk to the prophet, and the prophet would go to the people and give them the message. And the prophets were often hated for what they did. They were often persecuted, because when everybody was saying, do this, do this, do this, then the prophets would be out there saying, well, maybe not, because God says this. So they were quite unpopular. Well, Elijah the prophet, in the first book of Kings, there's 1 Kings and 2 Kings? In 1 Kings 19, Elijah the prophet, he is having a bad day. He is persecuted. He has seen people turn away from God left and right. And he feels like he's the only one left. He's really missed. And he's crying out to God, and God leads him into the wilderness and then into this cave. He basically, that's shortening it up a lot, but the 19 chapters in, he ends up in a cave. And God basically tells him, go there and I'm going to reveal myself to you. I'm going to speak to you. And that's good. That's what any human wants, but that's definitely what a prophet wants. You want to hear from God, because that's your whole line of business, is just getting the words of God. So he's in this cave, and he's waiting, and he's waiting, and then it starts. There's this, and you've probably, the adults anyway, you've heard this story, there's this rushing wind. The wind is so strong, scripture says the wind is so strong that the mountain starts to tear apart. That rocks are hitting it just like poof into powder. This wind is just demolishing everything, and he's in this cave. And we would say, well, okay, this is God like coming onto the scene, like swooping down. But the wind passes, and scripture says that he was not in the wind. God wasn't there. In the loudness, in the destruction, God wasn't there. So he's waiting, he's waiting. And then the earth starts to shake. The whole ground starts to rumble. And there's this massive earthquake. And actually right now, around the world actually, we're having a bunch of earthquakes we're hearing about. And they're terrified. Because this, the ground, that's like the one thing you're solid on. I mean, it can be snowy out, it can be windy out, dark or bright, doesn't matter. But we know like the ground's not going anywhere. But it's really unsettling when the ground does start to go. I lived in the Caribbean for 3 years on this little island, and they would occasionally have earthquakes. It's a volcanic island, and there you could feel the whole island shift sometimes, these bumps, and it's really unsettling, because this is solid. This is what we rely on. So he's waiting in this cave, and the ground starts to shake, and the ground starts to shake, and you would think, and I'm sure he thought, okay, this is God coming on the scene, and then the earthquake fades away, and God was not in the earthquake. And he's like, what's going on? And then the whole mountainside starts burning. A massive fire, not like just a little candle floating in the darkness. It's the mountain is on fire. This fire comes sweeping past the cave. And you would say, that's the fire of God, the presence of God. We even use that with the Holy Spirit. It's a fire. But the fire comes and burns and passes, and God was not in the flame. He's waiting, and he's waiting. And then he hears what scripture calls a whisper. That's it. After deafening wind, after deafening shaking, after burning flames, it quiets down and he hears a still small voice. And God was in the voice. And the coolest part about the scripture, so you're Elijah. You're in your cave, you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting, and these terrifying things are happening. These things that you wouldn't think, this is the power of God. This is God manifesting himself. Earthquakes, wind, fire, this is like those are like superheroes. That's like the beginning of comic books. Like these are actual like fire, and then they're powerful. And none of them are God, none of them are God, and none of them are God. And he's sitting there. He doesn't even say what the whisper says. He just hears a still small voice, the sound of a whisper. Some like Jewish translations talk about how it's almost that deafening sound that you get when it's too quiet. When all the noise fades away. There's a place in Minneapolis, it's the quietest place on earth. Have you ever heard about it? It's down underground, and they've created it. It's a manufactured space where there is no sound. And you can go in the room, and people say it's completely unsettling. You're away from even if we stop right now. You hear that, kid? His parents know what that's like. Just, no, I always hear that kid. No, but really, you could hear my computer makes noise. The speakers, there's a hum to the speakers. Sometimes you can hear your watch ticking if you're quiet enough. And people who go down into this room in Minneapolis, they say it totally wigs them out and you start to feel almost nauseous. Because they suddenly, for the first time in your life, you start hearing the blood in your pulse. You hear it in your ear. You start hearing the whoosh, whoosh of your life just pumping through your body. Yeah, they say it's actually super unsettling and you don't stay in there very long. Some Jewish authors had written that that's more what is behind the idea of the whisper, the still small voice, is that deafening sound of nothing. So Elijah is in the cave, and he's sitting there, and his ears are still ringing from everything he just heard. And he hears this whisper, and it says that he puts his cloak over his head, and he steps to the front of the cave. This guy, Elijah, knows. He recognizes, okay, this is something else. This is not distraction, this is not loud, this is not rumbling, this is not burning. This is God. He covers his face and he steps forward. And that's when God starts to talk to him. God didn't talk to him in the wind, in the fire, in the earthquake. He didn't talk to him. God wasn't there. It was loud, it was distracting. God began to speak to him in a still small voice. And it's great because then at that point, you know what God says? What are you doing here? Why are you out here? Why did you step out of here? What do you want to say? No, I just said, everything sucks. Everyone's leaving you. Everyone's turning away. People are mowed down in the streets for serving you. I feel like I'm the only one. Like, in this moment of silence, that's when God just says, tell me, talk to me. Why are you here? What's going on? And that's like a unique moment in all of Scripture. Because God does. He parts the seas and he does come down with fire. And he shows himself with fire with Elijah earlier in Scripture. He does. He comes down and burns up the offerings and everything. He does that. But there are times when he wants to cut through all of that and just talk to you. You, just at the edge of the cave with your face covered, just wants to be with you and say, hey, what's up? Why are you here? What's going on? And we don't treat him that way. We don't think that that's what this space is for. We don't think that that's what the cross is for and the Eucharist is for. Most times we don't know what it's for, but we know it's not just for intimacy. We know that it can't possibly be that when everything calms down and the gears stop whirring and the battery dies and the lights go out and it's just silence, we don't actually think that God would say to us, hey, what's going on? Why are you here? Whether you're a teenager or you're towards the end of your day, it doesn't matter. We run from that. We hide from that idea. We don't think that that's the kind of God we serve. We don't. With our daily life, day in and day out, we get up out of bed and we put our feet down and we go through our day and we don't really believe, we don't really live as if he's just there waiting, wanting things to just be silent and be in and with us and just say, hey, why are you here? What do you mean? Because you notice, like, Elijah didn't, like, fall down and worship, which is a good thing to do. Worship is good. In that moment, he knew, oh, God actually cares what's going on. And he just whined. He was whining, by the way. He wasn't totally justified in what he said, because he was not the only one left. Do you ever whine to God? I don't know. But my iPhone's dead. You ever? That seems. No, I'm just saying, right here, when this thing is close to death, I'm just. That's all. My kids, they don't need food. No one needs anything until I can just find a place to plug this in. My iPhone is dead. I didn't do well at school. Grown ups do it. They do it with a deeper voice. They do the same thing. My things didn't work out the way I wanted. And sometimes you're just being a baby, and we all admit it. Anna's a baby all the time. She does it all the time. It's fine. If we're honest, sometimes we're just being babies. I would bet very rarely here in International Falls do you feel like I'm the only Catholic, because you just look around the room and you're not the only one. And as far as I know, nobody's being mowed down in the streets here in International Falls. As far as I know, that Father is still following God and you can follow him and everything is actually doing pretty well. That doesn't mean you don't have a right to whine sometimes. What I'm getting at is letting everything pass away all the distractions, and allowing for the fact that God loves you enough, if he loves you enough to send his son, then he actually does care what's going on in you. Because God doesn't swoop down and be like, oh, I'm so sorry, Elijah. It's okay. There. He doesn't just coddle him, but he does care what Elijah said. He really does. He wouldn't have asked him. But Elijah couldn't get to that without the silence, without the whisper. And so the first thing I want to do tonight, in the short time we have, is just to identify some distractions. If you're memorizing words, you can memorize whisper. I've been trying to remind people of the few key words throughout the talk that later you can just, oh, what did he talk about? I don't know. I have no clue. I went to sleep like Father did. So, joking, Father. Just joking. He's like, what? But the first one would be whisper. The second would be distractions. We are just, we're a culture of distractions. They're everywhere. You can't, I don't know, there was a day many years ago that I was like, I don't like driving down the road anymore because there are so many signs on the side of the road. Like, even in my car, there's just advertisements everywhere. If you're online, there's pop-ups. If you have a pop-up locker, you can be on Facebook and there's things flashing all down each side. They want you to buy them, they want you to click on them, they want you to read them. They're everywhere. There's ads at the bottom and the tops and the sides of everything. It's everywhere. And everyone knows this, commercials. You're watching a show, comes the commercial, you get up to go to the kitchen. The commercial is like 38 times louder than the show you were watching. That's on purpose. It's louder so that you can hear it in the kitchen. That's actually why it's louder. They do that on purpose. It makes my wife so mad. She's like, it's not fair, they're invading my home, I can't get away. So that when you're in the kitchen, getting your distraction between your distractions, then they can still distract you more. It's everywhere. It's incessant. There's a guy named Bernie Krause. Has anybody heard of Bernie Krause? Okay, he's a naturalist. He was famous. He was like kind of the voice of nature. He was known really, really, and still kind of is, but he's in his 70s now. But he's known for recording nature sounds. Odds are in your life, if you've ever had to listen to nature sounds, or if you've ever been to a doctor's office and there's just like chirping in the background, really annoying, that chirping is probably recorded by Bernie Krause. He, from the 60s on, he just recorded thousands upon thousands upon thousands of hours. And he'll tell you, when he first started recording back in the 60s and 70s, he would have, you go out in the woods, you set up a recorder, and then you just sit or you leave it. He would have to record about 4 to 10 hours, give or take, to get 1 hour in there of just, not silence, because in nature it's never silent, but the absence of noise. A semi-truck somewhere off in the distance, an airplane 35,000 feet up and the sound finally reaches you. Some sort of noise pollution. It was about 4 to 10 hours it took him to get that recorded, to find an hour in there. And he said in the 90s, he said that it takes him now, literally though, 1,000 hours of recording till he can find somewhere in there that there's an hour of just the absence of noise, of noise pollution, just nature, without a machine somewhere, without some form of foreign noise coming in, over 1,000 hours of it. And we get it all the time. It's just inundating. The thing is, in a lot of ways, we like it and we grow to need it. And that's more what we're identifying. I'm not mad that there are machines. That part's fine. But his point even was just we are polluted with all this distraction, and because of it's very difficult to get to the center of things. We have bad distractions. I'm not going to talk about them for a long time. Vices, the things that are a vice. Catholic Church defines like a vice is a habit that you form that disposes you to do something bad. So vices, that's when we don't want to think about life, sometimes we go to vices. And those are addictions and things like that. And those are one form of distraction. And those are the pretty blatant ones. Those are the ones that we're like, yeah, alcoholism, drugs, things like that we turn to hide away from life. That's not what I'm talking about tonight. Those are very real problems. But underneath all of that, underneath the ones that we're like, well, at least I'm not doing that. Underneath are what I call the good distractions. The things that are good, but we use them for bad. Kind of like a hammer. A hammer's really awesome for nails, really bad for windows. Really awesome for nails, really bad for windows. Okay? It's the same hammer, it's just how it's used. And I want to be clear, the church is not against, like, media. Media is neutral. Media is morally neutral. There's nothing wrong with having an app that books faces. There's not Snapchat, things like that. They wanted me to tell Father Ben, I don't call it Snapchat, I call it Snapchat. It's trendy. I had a seventh grader inform me that Facebook is so old, so I don't go on there anymore. Anyway, none of them are bad. They're fine, they're good. I have Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, all of those. What's the other one? There's one more. Twitter, I have that one. I tweet, big deal. I tweet all the time, it's no big deal. They're fine, but they can be misused. Now they can be misused, again, for bad things, just that are blatantly, everybody agrees, bullying. Online, I don't know, extortion, I don't know, big things, they're really easy. But then there are the small things, like, I have a few minutes to myself, I'm gonna get on my phone. I always joke, and I know this is because we're in a church, there is a time of day where every human is alone in a restroom, just hanging out for a while, okay? Just sitting around. During that time frame, everybody's just this, I have to have this, I have to swipe, I don't care which direction, I just have to have it. Because I can't just sit here, I can't just sit. And there's a game called Candy Crush, you guys know Candy Crush? Okay, it's like old school, but I was 3 or 4 years behind on Candy Crush. And people had talked about it and gotten addicted and then gone to therapy and rehab and then gotten back into health. And then I downloaded it. And I'm like, oh, Candy Crush, okay. And then I was like, oh, I'm doing pretty well. I'm on like level 17. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I wonder how far you can go. There's no end to Candy Crush. There's no end board. There's no final level. And then I started to look at the games that are popular right now. They're endless games. Games that there's the guy who runs in the jungle. What's it called? What is it? Well, Tarzan does run in the jungle. Abs nailed it. What is it? Temple Run, yeah. So everybody's like, oh, you should try that. And I'm like, oh, okay, I'm running and jumping so well. No, I'm not, because it never ends. Temple Run never, none of the games ever end. And that's exactly the way that culture wants it. Endless distraction. No, you didn't win the game. See, when I was a kid, you won the game, you beat it. The little flag went up and Mario was like, yeah, and then that was it. Then you're like, I'm gonna go play outside or maybe eat. I haven't eaten in days, I'm gonna go do that. But now it's not, you don't have to ever eat again because you can just temple run forever and ever and ever. Look at the games on your own phone. Look at the amount of time you have put into trying to beat a level on a made-up game. But that's what our culture wants. And to be honest, that's what the devil wants. It wants a bunch of humans, not just humans, a bunch of Catholics who are completely incapacitated from their potential because they're just doing this. Just doing this. Just doing this. Because why do you log on to Facebook when you did it 20 minutes ago? I gotta see what people said. Why are you on Twitter? I gotta see what people said there though. Why are you on Snapchat? Well, I'm on Snapchat because I gotta see what people put a picture of. And all it is just constant, 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 because that'll never end. People will keep posting. People will keep commenting. People will keep taking pictures of their donuts. It's gonna keep, I don't understand. Eat the donut, please. That's what I always want to do. Anytime that people post food, I just wonder, why don't you eat that? People in Africa would love to eat it. But that's what we do, it's incessant. Distractions are all over. Now, and actually Facebook and social media, those are the easy ones. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows binge watching Netflix is not actually healthy for you. It's just not. My wife is a doctor and she's been studying with a pediatrician recently. And she just told me today, actually, she, you know what you need to use for your talk? Tell them this. She was just yesterday at the office and the doctor asks parents, how many minutes a day do your kids get of screen time? And gauges their responses. Because statistics, studies show, for kids, 2 hours is the maximum anybody, grown up or not, should look at a screen every day. 2 hours. It is technically not healthy for the brain and full functionality to look at a screen longer than that every day. Studies show that teens and adolescents who spend that amount of time or more in front of a screen are more likely to be alcoholics, more likely to abuse substance, more likely to drop out of school. All of those are linked to just this. And at the root of it all, so distractions are real. I don't want to skip over the good distractions. So I was a youth minister at St. Benedict's Church in Duluth for 4 years. And when I was down there, Father Mike, you know, he's the head of the youth ministry and for the diocese. And every other year, they make all the youth ministers go to a silent retreat at Pachamon Terrace down in Isanti, Minnesota. And it's kind of a required thing. If there's just some, you know, circumstance, you just need to go to it. And I was terrified. First of all, I didn't grow up Catholic, so I wasn't used to silence of any kind. But to think that it was 3.5 days of silence. And I don't know. Anna, 3.5 minutes? Pretty scary. Come on. I mean, think about the next 24 hours not being allowed to talk at all. Oh, and that includes text and Facebook and any of them. And then think 3.5 days. I was so scared. And all the other youth ministers were like, Nick, you're up a creek, man. This is not going to go well for you. We're going to find you like exploded in your little cabin because you each get your own little cabin. I was really nervous about it. I've never been quiet a day in my life, like for a full day. Why? Why would I do that? The world needs to hear me talk. So I was so scared. And Father Mike told a story. Well, he told two stories before we went. And I got permission today to tell these stories. One, and this is a total aside, but he went on a 30-day silent retreat when he was younger. And at that time, and this is probably before some of you, well, it was before you guys were born, but there was a show called Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And Father Mike admitted out loud that he enjoyed that show. I don't know. I blame him. I judge him. But he was really into that show, and he went on this 30-day silent retreat. And in the middle of it, I guess it was the finale of the whole series or some big episode, and he knew about it. And he had, in the middle of a 30-day silent retreat, he snuck a television into a closet, a janitor's closet, and had a blanket over it, and he watched an episode. But he didn't talk, so at least he didn't, like, break the silence. But I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. But the other thing he said was, and I was so scared going in, he said he noticed that he was so keen on distractions that he had done this. When you're on a silent retreat, you get it, you know, it's all about prayer. So you're sitting down in this little cabin for days, and he said he would sit down and he would have a little table with a Bible and a notebook and a pen to write things down when God was speaking to him. And then you have a little kettle in there, so he'd make tea, and he had his little tea set up and all these things. And he realized, not too long after he had been doing it for a while, that he had made his whole setup his own little distraction. Why? I can't possibly start praying yet. I have to have my tea the right way, and I have to have my, oh, and I gotta do this, and oh, I gotta do that. And he had made the regimen, the whole setup that was supposed to, you know, encourage him to pray. He had made it a distraction on a silent retreat when you're not supposed to have any distraction. That's how good we are. Now, mine recently, I'm super, super busy. My wife is pregnant. She's due January 12th. Oh, I guess when I was here last time, she was. We have not been able to have kids. We've been married 15 years. We've never been able to have a kid. We adopted kids. We always knew we were going to do that. But we found out this summer that she's pregnant. And so she's due January 27th. So she is psycho right now. She's a crazy person. You doing a high five or do you have a question? That's your brother's birthday? High five for that. So she's due and she's psycho. And I have 3 kids, 5, 7, and 11, and they're psycho. And then I'm unbalanced. And I'm the primary caregiver, and my in-laws live with us in the basement. So I have my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, married people, you understand. And so life is crazy right now, and I have a little black notebook with me all the time of all the things I have to do. And in the middle of my stress last week, I don't know what happened. I could literally go all night, I could work all night and not get my list done. I have so much that needs to be done in my life. And I got it in my head, over the years I've collected books, just used bookstore books. I have in the office of the house where I keep these bookshelves, but they're filled with books, like a few hundred books. I got it in my head, like I really want to catalog those books. I wonder if there's an app to do that. And there is an app. There are a few of them. And I found myself at 2 a.m. in my office just scanning ISBN codes so I can catalog my book. And I remember going, what the heck am I? I just wanted to throw my phone, but you can't ever, ever throw my precious. But I wanted to. I was like, what am I doing? This isn't on the list. Cataloging stupid books I will never read is not on my list. But what did I do? I needed a distraction from all the other lists that I have. So I just made up an incredibly stupid list. And my mother-in-law, the next morning, she's a great woman, but she was like, what's going on? I'm like, yeah, I just really want to get my books, you know, cataloged. And she looked at me with, the look said, you're so dumb. But she's from Georgia, and she just said, why? And in her, I mean, to her face, I was just like, I don't know. Like, I had no clue, but I needed a distraction from everything I didn't want to face. And we all are so, that's mine, that's not yours. I hope that's not yours, because it's exhausting. But you have your own too. You have your own way of distracting yourself from what you know lies ahead. One of the things you are afraid of is boredom. The idea of just being bored. Did you know that the word boredom, which has a negative connotation, that word hasn't existed until the Industrial Revolution. Until we had the ability to have watches with us and know what time it was and have to keep ourselves busy. Until all of that we're experiencing now, the idea of being bored didn't exist. In fact, that moment where you have nothing to do and your mind is like, that was considered a good thing. In fact, people will say, you can't actually be creative in any area until you first get bored. Until your mind goes like, okay, let's make something. They did a study. They would just have people sit down and let them get bored. And after about 10, 15 minutes, they would have them write down. They'd say, stop, what are you thinking about right now? And they'd write it down. And almost to the letter, here's what people would do. They would sit down, and like the one guy was my favorite. He was like, I was sitting there, and I looked out the window, saw another building, and before I knew it, in my head, I had jumped out of the window, flown up to that other building, landed on a windowsill, lifted up the window, and got inside. I mean, in second, what did his mind do? As soon as it was calm and not distracted, it started creating awesome stuff. But we can't handle it. We're so scared. We're used to 3-second screenshots that are now down to 2-second screenshots. The next time you watch a commercial, count how many frames one shot is on. Most commercials are 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. And your brain learns to keep up with that, and it does not want to calm down. Your brain does not want to stop swiping. Be honest. Have you, people with smartphones, have you ever, in the night, seen flashes of a scrolling screen? Come on, be honest. I do. I'll be like falling asleep at the end of the day after I'm done cataloging, and I'll lay down and I will see just a scrolling screen. Older people, do you guys know the game Free Cell on computers? Free Cell, Solitaire, it's a solitaire, or solitaire even on computers. When I was in college, there were no smartphones, but Free Cell, I would play Free Cell till 4 a.m. at college. That's why I got bad grades, by the way. Just kids, if you want to know how to get bad grades, just play games all night. But in the daytime, at class, I would see cars flash up. That's all I was doing. So we're afraid of being bored because we're afraid of what waits after boredom. The other thing that we're all afraid of, innate, is of losing control. You're afraid to not be in control. If you have your phone, you can control what's going on. And it's like subconscious, but you can control it. You swipe, you close it, you open another app. You get done with that one, you go back to that first app. But we do it even without smartphones. We want to be in control of things. My grandma does it with crossword puzzles. All of my life, I don't know if she does anything else in her life, but I know that she does crossword puzzles, and she does them really well. Because that's her distraction, that's her thing. Some people it's books, some people it's sports. For everybody it's different, but in some way or another, we distract ourselves because we're afraid of not being in control. That's why we're also afraid of conversations, face-to-face conversations. When I was a youth minister at St. Ben's, the first thing I would do, every youth that would be willing to, like if you guys were my youth, I would just ask individually, would you be willing to go out to coffee with me once a month? I'll buy you coffee, whatever you want to do, to order the... Some of them have like 980 calories in them, go for it, go for it. And the kids who would say yes, we would meet once a month, every 2 weeks, we'd sit down, and the first time meeting with them was my favorite. Because we would sit down and these teenagers would, well, they'd just be so awkward. Just sit down and, hi. Hi, how are you? Fine. That's the teenagers. their eye has little seizures. They go up for some reason. And they would all do it. It didn't matter. Boy, girl, age, didn't matter. So, how was your week? Fine. And I would press on for an hour. I had an hour with them. It was my hour. Their parents knew they were there. We're in this for an hour. What do you do at school? Play hockey! That's awesome. What do you play? Center! And they would just push through it, and they hated it. That first hour, I never had a youth who was like, this is the best ever. They all hated me to the core. They wanted me dead. Six of them cut my brake line by the end of the day. No problem. They did not enjoy the hour of conversation. But you know what happened? After about 6-7 months of us meeting, they'd sit down and they'd be like, how was your week? Oh, it was great. Guess what happened? And then they would just tell me. Why? Because they had learned how faces can communicate. That's really scary. In fact, Boston College, a professor at Boston College, he did it. He said extracurricular, extra credit. You want extra credit? You have to go on 3 dates. But here's the stipulation for how you go on that date. 3 things you have to do. 1, you have to ask them out face to face. They're like, you two looked right at each other. I would never do that. My boyfriend won't have a face. You have to ask them out face to face. The second thing is there could be no alcohol involved. And the third was there could be no sex. The professor, you have to go on 3 dates. You get extra credit just for going on dates. But they have to be these 3 things. You have to ask her out or him out face to face. Can't drink, you can't sleep together. And he had students coming up after me and like, what are we supposed to do then? Well, no, you ask her out and go out and talk to each other. About what? I can't drink at all. I can't just text her and ask her out. Nope. Not if you want extra credit. He didn't know what to do with themselves because people are losing that ability to just talk to each other. If I sat down next to you on a park bench, it's immediate awkwardness. I do it all the time. Men in the room, we know what it's like to go into a men's bathroom, right? I'm gonna let the ladies in on something. There is etiquette to male bathrooms. I don't know how, I think women is just chaos and sconces everywhere. But for a men's room, when a guy walks into a men's room, if there are 3 urinals, and there's a guy here and a guy here, you wait. You don't split the defense. You don't just walk between me like, oh, what's up? You don't do it. You'll wait. If you see on my Instagram, I have a hashtag PLO. I tell guys, if you walk into a room and there's like 2 and then the midget one, just take the midget one. Because that way some guy who comes in doesn't have to. Hashtag PLO. You're not supposed to do that. Nobody wants to walk in and just see you like this. Like trying to, awkward. There's an etiquette to it. And so for a long time, I stopped doing it now because I'm a grown up. But when I was a grown up but not mature, as I am now, I would go into the bathroom and I would purposely stand in the urinal next to a guy and I'd give it a couple seconds and be like, yo, what's up? How you doing? And so many times, like, oh, and then they just walk away. They have shy bladder. They just, I'll go somewhere else then. And they leave. That's not conversation. But we're not good at conversation, actually. It's so awkward for us, for anybody. And that is partially because you have all done it now. It used to be like comedians would talk about it. And social commentaries would talk about it. When you go to a restaurant, look around. See how many families all have their phone up. Their heads are down. And they spend their whole meal with their heads down. How many couples will go out to dinner together and just keep their faces down? How many times you will go home and no conversation happens because the TV's on? It's so common that we don't even notice it anymore. So we're scared of conversation, but you know what we're really scared of? Is silence. We're petrified of it. We do not like silence. When I give talks and I want Q&A at the end, I always say, so we're gonna have a little time of Q&A. It takes on average about 13 seconds to formulate a question, so go! And then I'll wait. And we'll hit 13, 14, and people are dying. People will make up questions so that there can be some sort of talking. Because we don't know what to do with nothing happening because we're completely out of control of it. If we were just talking, and I just... Aren't you awkward right now? It was about 11 seconds. What is your name? Grace. She made up a name. It's not Grace. It's Grace. It was about 11 seconds in, and Grace was just the first one. I don't know. Did she? So she looks down and away and lets out some sort of noise. You have to let something out, and you can't talk, so it's got to be... Usually it's a boy, though. I have found usually it's one of those guys right there. Somebody goes, if I were to just keep being quiet, we would all be, what am I doing? What am I? This is so stupid. This isn't even proving a point. Because you're wanting me to prove a point. He's here. We're here to listen to him say something. You're here to get something. So you'd start to get frustrated. You'd be frustrated at the silence. Then you'd be mad. Then you could leave justified and be angry. Well, I'm not coming back again. The guy just stared at us the whole time. I don't like looking at that face. Because you wouldn't know what to do with it. I went into my three and a half day silent retreat very, very afraid. For 24 hours, it's a lot like when you pull up, if you're driving a stick and you pull up and you lift up so it's not in commission anymore. But the gears are just still spinning, calming down. When you pull up to a stop sign, the gears are still spinning. If you ever power down your iPhone, it actually doesn't just shut off. It takes a while. It's a little spinny-winny. And then it's still kind of not black, but it's a screen, but it's dark. And then it goes black. For 24 hours, that was me. Like, there was a rocking chair, and I just rocked. For hours, none of it's made up. This is how bad it was for the first 24. Like, I got in there, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be okay. I'm not going to die right away. So I walked, and it's about the size of this area here. It's just a small cabin in the woods. Everybody gets one. And there's a bed, and a little stove for a tea kettle, and then a rocking chair, and then a cross on the wall. And that's it. So you just rock. And then I would find out that my life is so busy that I was exhausted. So I would rock myself to sleep in the rocking chair. And I'd wake up a couple hours later and be like, oh, okay, I gotta keep going there. So I would just keep rocking. I'd lay down in bed, I went to sleep, I'd wake up in the middle of the night, and then I fall back asleep again. Nothing, no prayer, no deep experience with God. Just going out of my skin. Like, okay, I can text my wife. I'm justified. She's my wife. You know, she's my other half. We're one flesh. I can text her. I could go run through the woods and try to talk to squirrels. Something, anything. And then after, the weirdest thing happened. After 24 hours, like after I had gotten enough sleep, and after the gears had just slowed down, and I realized, nope, I'm not texting anyone. I'm not calling anyone. I'm not talking to anyone. I don't have to say anything to God. And he doesn't have to talk back to me. I'm just gonna shut up. And the weirdest thing happened. It was like this calm set in on this cabin. And I found at one point, Nick Davidson, fidgety Nick Davidson, energetic, annoying Nick Davidson. I sat in that rocking chair staring at a cross for 6 hours. But I wasn't having like religious thoughts. I was just staring for 6 hours and I was fine with it. And when the 3.5 days was up, I found as I was packing up the cabin, I found myself going, gosh, if I just had one more day here, I would like that. And I was excited to see my wife. We didn't have any kids at the time. I was excited to go back. But I was also like, gosh, I mean, just even 24, I wonder if, and I literally thought, I wonder if I can negotiate and just stay. Everybody can leave and I can stay an extra day. Because you've never felt it unless you've done that. Until you've been silent for days, you don't know what it's like over there. And I miss it. Weekly, I think about it. And that was like 6 years ago that I was able to do that. And we're we're afraid of it because you can't control where your mind goes if you can't talk. We burst every bubble with talking, texting, and tweeting, just getting it all out, just put that, we have that, we gotta do something. We got hype, then we're out there. And we all do it, and we don't know we're doing it. Think, now tonight, after tonight, analyze yourself. How do you hold your time when you get 5 minutes free? Is it really hard not to pull that phone up to your face? Is it really hard not to look over and just talk to somebody next to you? My grandpa, he texts all the time now. My own grandpa, who used to be like, I will never speak on a phone while driving a motor vehicle. Recently, I was on the phone and I could hear him yelling at somebody who was driving past. And I was like, grandfather, how dare you? I was like, I'm sure you pulled over, right, Gramps? And he's like, no. I was like, you're a hypocrite. And I hung up on him. But here's the bigger question. The bigger question is, now those are all distractions. You have your own and they're real. And we should cut them back. But here's why. The real question is, first, what are you distracting yourself from? Most of us, it's honesty. Most of us, all the grown-ups, all the kids, we don't want to face what our life is like. It's kind of like you get on a train, if you've ever ridden on a train ride, you know, the window's out, you see all the stuff going by, you have a destination. You pull those blinds down, you get some music up loud, no clue what's going on. We do that. We get our lives going and we're rolling, and then we're afraid. Okay, but if I take stock, I don't know if I'm where I should be in my job. I'm not sure if my relationship with my spouse is what it should be. I'm not sure that I even have a relationship with God at this point. I'm not sure that I should be doing what I'm doing at school. I'm not sure I should be dating this person. I'm not sure I should be saying these things. I'm not sure, and I don't want to address it. Why? Because we're afraid. Because we're afraid when it all calms down and we have to see it for clear, for what it really is, that we shouldn't be it, that we should be elsewhere. And that's terrifying. We're afraid of our careers not being what they should be, our loves not being what they should be. So we distract. We distract. We distract ourselves from admitting our own faults. We distract ourselves from all the promises we've made over the years. All the hurts that we've had over the years, all the insecurities we have at school. When I was in 11th grade, guys, I was shorter than the 7th graders. So who's in 7th grade? Anyone? 7th grader. Who is in 11th? Anybody in 11th? Okay, so when I was an 11th grade boy, and all the guys were giants, I was just like the lollipop guild, like still just munchkin land. I was so small. I got put in lockers and locked in there 2 different times in my high school career. And I remember, like, gosh, the feeling crammed and changed and made fun of because I wasn't what I should be in so many fronts. I come from a broken home. I have not always looked like Brad Pitt. I didn't always have these muscles. I was just awkward on all fronts. If a girl said hi, I was just beat red. I was embarrassed. People used to make me blush on purpose. 10th grade guys would make me blush on purpose and then point and laugh and say, he's doing it, he's doing it. Because I couldn't stop it. I was just awkward and embarrassed all the time. And I remember thinking, like, anything to distract myself from that. Parties, whatever we have to do, like, whatever, like, distraction we can do when school gets out on the weekend, anything so I don't have to just think about what's going on at home or what's going on in here. Anything. And all that comes from fear. The reason that we're upset, now Facebook isn't something that we just go to it because we're afraid. We go to it over and over and over because we're afraid. Our distraction we go to because we're afraid. We have whisper, we have distractions. What we are distracting ourselves from is honesty. But the biggest question is, who are we distracting ourselves from? There are two answers. One, this kid. No, what's your answer? God's the second one. The first one actually is yourself. To be honest, we like to think that, like, teenagers, they're like still finding themselves, but once we're grown-ups, we got it, we figured it out. No, we don't, we're just super good at misdirection. The kids, how many people have seen me do this? No? Okay, so everybody here, do this. Hands out. Do this. Even the grown-ups are like, oh. Okay, do this. Turn them over. Go over. Yep. Now turn it up. Okay, we'll do it again. Something broke. Turn it over. Turn it over. Yep, now turn it up. It's the adults who are like, ah! It's a demon, I'm out of here. David Copperfield, the magician, went in his big stage show. That's how he opens his show. He came out in the one spotlight and that's what he would do. That's called misdirection. If you do what I did, I'll show you. Do this. This. You move your hand over and then you let go and you motion as if you're helping and then you grab under and turn it up. Just misdirection. And we do that with ourselves every day. We misdirect ourselves. We throw ourselves into helping at church. We throw ourselves into sports. We throw ourselves even into the good things. Good things become bad distractions because they are distracting us from what's inside and we're scared of it. We're afraid of who we might be. We are afraid that we're not good. Oh, you gotta go. Somebody's gotta go. That's the dad motion. Thanks for coming. Have a good night. Drive carefully. You distract yourself from yourself. Why? Because you're afraid that you're not good. But then he was right. The deepest one is this. We distract ourselves from God because we're afraid that he's not good. We distract ourselves at church, in our everyday life, from prayer and from silence because we're afraid. We're afraid that he's mad, that he's disappointed, that he doesn't see us as good. We're afraid. And Advent is a time of this preparation. It's not penitential. We're excited. We're preparing. It's like an engagement. But it's a time for every one of you guys. Now, it's not like Lent where you have to give something up. You can. But I've got to beg you in your life, not because any of the distractions are bad in and of themselves, but because there is something else waiting on the other side of it. I beg you guys, teens, start now. Learn how to shut up. And you have to at school. I know I'm not talking about with your parents. I'm talking in your own life. Learn how to shut yourself up. To go, yeah, like that. To go up into your room and to turn the phone off just for 15 minutes. And just sit. Well, do what? Nothing. Well, what if God doesn't talk? You're not doing it so that he will do something. Just calm yourself. Let your gears stop. When I was at that silent retreat, they give you this little book. It's about, and I can't remember, she was Polish, I think. She wrote this book on the wilderness and how hermits would go out into the wilderness and they'd pray for days and months and years, and it's amazing. And she said, but I can't, because I'm a mom and I have to live an everyday life. So where's my wilderness? And she would say this, at one point every day, you're alone because you're changing clothes. You know, you're up in your room, you're changing your clothes. She chose to make her changing her clothes and getting dressed in the morning a wilderness, where that was just her and God. A buddy of mine was a priest. He said his desk is like an L, and his computer's here, and all of his paperwork's here. And he just said, no, when I'm done here, and I have to turn to here, I make that a wilderness, where I make it intentional. I turn, and I give it a breath. I just shut it out for a second. I have a 4.5-hour drive home. That's through an actual wilderness in Minnesota. That's different. You guys all have wildernesses every day. If you look for them, little times that you can just, it's not because Candy Crush or whatever's popular is bad. It's because it distracts you from how good you are and how much God loves you. And there is a depth waiting that people don't get to see. There's something waiting for you on the other side of letting things go. John of the Cross, that's my patron saint, he said that he knew a guy, a fellow priest, who all he wanted, he had this twisted, like he had twisted metal into the shape of a cross, and he kept it with him all the time. And the guy would just say, this helps me pray. When everything else is chaos, I can just look at this, this helps me pray. And John of the Cross said, you know, at some point, sooner or later, that guy's gonna have to let that go. Not because that cross is bad, but because you don't need the things you think you need. I'll close with this. The gospel reading this weekend, John the Baptist tells his followers, hey, go to that Jesus guy and ask him this. Are you the chosen, the promised one? Or should we wait for another? Are you him? Or should we wait for someone else? Is there someone else for me, or are you him? And I wish as a teenager, somebody looked at me and just said, Nick, everything you're looking for in your distractions, in your broken home, in your relationships, everything you're looking for in wanting applause and attention and fear of abandonment, everything you're looking for is in him. Everything you're looking for is in receiving him. Everything you want, all the confidence in yourself as a person, all the applause that you want from your family and your friends, all the success that you see ahead of you in life, all of it that you're wanting is him, is Jesus. If I had known that, my life would have been so much better, and I would not have wounded so many people in my life. If I had let go of my version of a cell phone. If you let go, and it doesn't mean stop social media. It means let go of it. Stop needing it. When you need it, you crush it to pieces. When it has to provide distraction and happiness and goodness for you, it can't. There is no one else for any one of us but Jesus. There is no one else for us but him. And that doesn't mean you have to become like a saint who prays 38 hours, if that's possible, 24 hours a day. You don't need to give up your career goals. You don't need to give up the things you enjoy. You take all of those into that cave with you and just say, talk to me. Be with me. And God shows up in that silence and he cares about you. He shows up when you get dumped, when you get made fun of, when you're not good at school, when your parents are disappointed in you. He shows up when your marriage fails. He shows up when you don't care about church anymore and you feel so far from God. If you strip it all away and just be silent, he speaks to you. He comes to you. I'll close with this. Everything depends on who's waiting on the other side. If a grumpy, angry God is waiting on the other side, if that angry kid who's trying to burn ants with a magnifying glass is waiting on the other side, if that's who's waiting for you in the confessional, if that's who's waiting for you in the cross looking down at you disappointed, then run. Run from that. You'll never come back. But if who's waiting for you is the loving God who formed you and cares about you and wants to share your pain and loves you and wants to go with you as you succeed, wants to guide you in the best possible, happiest, most fulfilling life, if that's the God who's waiting for you, then shut everything else away. Turn it on silent and focus your eyes on him. And like it, we're in Advent, that he will come to you. And you will hear him in a way that none of the rumble and fire and wind ever could have. You will hear him in here. In a way that no one else can even hear, you will know he has spoken to you. Because you finally stripped everything away and just said, speak to me. I'm here for you. I'll leave. I'll go to any cave you tell me to. I'll turn everything off. Just be with me. And you will. And I encourage you to do it this Advent, okay? Now, I'm not one for ending on like an emotional note, because you don't need emotion. Go out of here and just live with Christ. So I usually trail off like this at the end and make it very awkward. Thank you. Some of you have parents who are like, why aren't you out here? Why did you turn your phone off? You can tell them it's because the preacher guy told you to. That's me.
It's already appreciated.
Thank you.